Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world on kpfk.org. My name is Manuel Criollo, one of the co-hosts for your Voices from the Frontline segment. Today we have a great show lined up for you. So first we'll have a short action alert with Hamed Khan with the South Asian Network to talk to us about current federal legislation that's on the Senate floor as we speak. If passed, H.R. 418, called the Real ID Bill, would have devastating impacts on the rights of immigrants. So bring out your pen and paper for that. Then we'll be joined by Nativo Lopez, president of the Mexican American Political Association, MAPA, talking to us about the L.A. Sheriff's new policy to check inmates' immigrant status and the talk of new power that the LAPD is trying to obtain to detain suspected deported immigrants from L.A. streets. Following Nativo, we'll have Christian Parenti to discuss his recent article on The Nation magazine called Hugo Chavez and Petropopulism. All that and more, so stay tuned. We'll be back with Eric Mann's weekly commentary. Welcome back. You're listening to Voices from the Frontlines. This is Manuel Criollo, and today, you know, because people have been loving these great reviews and weekly commentaries for Eric Mann, we have Eric Mann on the phone to give us his take on one of our fallen comrades at the Strategy Center. Eric?
Hey, Manuel. You know, we all think so much about our lives while we're alive, and whether anybody else cares or not, we take our lives so seriously, and then after death, we wonder if anybody even remembers us. So one of the members of the Bus Riders Union was a true character named Herman Mulman. He lived from 1918 to 2005 and died recently. And I wrote a memorial slash obituary for his life that I'd like to read to you all. Herman Mulman was a character, a free thinker and a mensch. That's Yiddish for a good guy. I first met Herman in 1982 when I was the coordinator of the campaign to keep GM Van Nuys open. Our goal was to save a plant of 5,000 workers, primarily Latino and black and 15% women, from the hand of GM, the Grim Reaper, who was closing down plants in California right and left, or rather right and right. Why give the left a bad name? Their reason, profit maximization. They now decided it was more profitable to consolidate production in the Midwest, to reduce shipping costs and inventory storage, to move to what was called just-in-time manufacturing on the Japanese efficiency model. But what of the workers who had lived and worked in L.A. for decades, those at the GM Southgate plant, surely to be closed, and the GM Van Nuys plant, in danger of being closed next? I was working as an assembly line worker at the time, and I approached the president of the local UAW 645, Pete Beltran, and proposed a preemptive campaign to keep GM Van Nuys open. But how could we force big bad GM to do anything? The workers were frightened, terrified. Class struggle was the last thing from their mind. Thanks to our union, the United Auto Workers, giving away the store was the sacrifice du jour. Concessions in the form of wage giveaways, holidays, medical, dental, whatever it takes, boss, to keep my job. Our local had a different idea, a more militant idea, a more creative and risky idea. Why not organize a boycott of GM from the community point of view, in that a union local by contract could not boycott its own employer? We formed the Labor Community Coalition to keep GM Van Nuys open, a predecessor to the Labor Community Strategy Center. And through 10 years of community organizing, we built a civil rights coalition focusing on the black and Latino communities that was strong enough to force GM to keep that plant open for a decade. Out of that organizing work, I met Herman Mulman, who even then said he was from Seniors for Political Action or some such group he made up. Herman didn't look that old to me, and in Los Angeles and Hollywood, calling yourself a senior is career suicide. But Herman had good ties to the Democratic Party and opened up doors with local elected officials in the Valley like Howard Berman, who later became a real ally of the campaign. At the time, Herman was running against the nemesis of progressives in the Valley, City Councilman Arnani Bernardi, award healing flack who wasn't worth the time of day, but it was hard as hell to beat. Herman ran against him on a shoestring, putting forth a progressive pro-labor platform, running a righteous, if tongue-in-cheek, campaign. Herman got relatively few votes, but a lot of notoriety. Herman was a very serious man in a not-so-serious suit of clothes. I hadn't seen him for years when he began showing up at the bus riders union meetings when we began in the early 1990s. By then he'd aged quite a bit, but was still feisty and outraged. If the LA bus system is bad, the San Fernando bus system is worse. And Herman never tired of telling us that. But every third Saturday of the month, for almost 10 years, he attended BRU meetings without fail. During the introductions, he always introduced himself as Herman Mulman from that third world country, the San Fernando Valley. A lot of people didn't like that appellation. Our members are predominantly black and Latino, often immigrants, and some don't like describing the still very white and historically racist Valley as a third world country. But I noticed that very few members really resented it. It was our young staff, politically correct in the good sense, who was still a little too hard on Herman. And Herman could be a real pain in the ass. He would often not use his headphones to listen to the Spanish translation. We have headphones for Spanish, Korean, and English. What's the point, he would say. I can barely hear the English. He would often speak out of turn and had a rather repetitious set of demands. Let's throw all the bastards out of office, a true sentiment, but one that we were hardly capable of implementing. But as some of the younger organizers had trouble figuring out what to do with Herman, I noticed how much affection he received from the older members, Latino, black, and Asian, and white. They could identify more with Herman's infirmities and antics, his feistiness, his willingness to schlep in from the valley on the bus for an hour and a half ride each way once a month, his mental alertness, and his willingness to fight. At one meeting he got up to speak, I have back problems, bladder problems, prostate problems. If I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. And I watched as many of the elder members nodded in agreement, laughing at that old chestnut of a joke, as Herman lived into his 87th year. About 2 years ago, Herman came up to me and said, it doesn't look too good. I have prostate cancer, but my son has taken me to a very good doctor. But then, of course, he had to add, but what the hell do these doctors know anyway? In the past 2 years, he had looked in decline, his walk more halting, his posture more stooped, his attendance more sporadic. But still, time after time, he came to the meetings, if only to proudly and defiantly declare his third world roots, knowing full well it pissed some people off, making him all the more happy to announce it. It's hard to understand Herman as a type, the Jewish left liberal who really liked black and Latino people, who was not a white flight valley dog, who defended the rights of immigrants, who was comfortable being in a white minority, and who was a Jew, the unique friends of people of color among whites. Last year, during the MTA mechanic strike, when the strike shut down public transit for more than a month, as the BRU supported the mechanics, while the mechanics union leadership did not do a damn or give a damn about bus riders, we set up a car pickup for members who needed rides to our central LA general membership meetings. I was assigned to pick up Herman, just as later Martin Hernandez was generously willing to do it for more times than one my one-day assignment. I saw Herman in his modest home that he shared with his daughter, living very simply, to say the least, and so happy to see me when I picked him up and later dropped him off. Later, I heard him tell others, with some pride, you'll never guess who picked me up. Eric Mann. Eric Mann picked me up, as if I was the celebrity cabbie of the month. Herman, it was an honor to pick you up. You gave your life to the struggle, fetching and moaning all the way to your grave, and probably, if we listen carefully, still cursing out the system from 6 feet under. This is Eric Mann from Voices from the Frontlines.
So that was Eric Mann's weekly commentary. Please, you're listening to Voices from the Frontline on 90.7 FM Los Angeles. So we'll be right back with Hamed Khan with the South Asian Network.